Our next panel is going to be a little bit different. Rather than focusing on issues within secularism, we're going to focus on a topic outside of secularism. So our three panelists this morning all come from religious student organizations. Our first panelist is Sam Rosenblum from Hillel. Do you prefer Samantha or Sam? Okay. Sam is a junior studying political science and history here at UW. She found her passion for interfaith discussion through the Muslim-Jewish Volunteer Initiative, an organization that seeks to foster understanding through volunteerism, a pillar of both faiths. She is currently a religious and community life intern for the Reform Minyan at the University of Hillel and is also involved in College Democrats and the Distinguished Lecture Series. Please welcome Sam Rosenblum. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's all good. Our next panelist comes from our own ranks in AHA. Chris Calvi can be credited with revitalizing AHA and turning it into everything it is today. He has held practically every position that can be held in AHA, including president, vice president, and executive director. He's also the creator of the Free Thought Festival and one of my best friends. Please welcome Chris Calvi. Yep. And our last panelist comes from the Muslim Student Association. Ala, I'm going to have you pronounce your own last name.
My name is pronounced Ala Nathan, but Ala is fine.
Okay. Cool. Ala is a junior at UW-Madison working on two majors, community and nonprofit leadership and sociology, and she is also doing two certificates in African studies and criminal justice. She is the public relations chair for the Muslim Student Association, and in her free time, she likes to explore the world, travel, talk to new people, and laugh. Please welcome Ala Fleifel. I'm sorry. this morning they will be talking about the umbrella topic religion and morality, and now I'm going to hand it over to Margaret again, who will be moderating this panel.
I have my lapel, and I know it's on now. It's on for sure. Good. Great. All right. Welcome, everyone. Welcome back. Me again. So this panel is on religion and morality. You've met our panelists. We have the umbrella topic of religion and morality, as Sam said. We again have four subtopics. The first one is, where do we get our morals from? The second one is religious understanding of social justice. The third one is kosher and halal impurity laws. And the fourth subtopic is the concept of where evil comes from in morality. So when panelists would like to speak, they can raise their name placards if discussion gets kind of quick. And you all have the floor. You're free to go.
Cool.
Okay. Does anyone want to start? I'll start. So when I first heard about this topic, I actually thought it was really interesting. I was like, I can't speak on this. Because I think, I come from a very, liberalized version of Judaism. I'm a Reformed Jew. And I actually was talking to Ella about this, and I said, I just don't think I'm necessarily a moral person because I am Jewish. And I think a lot of Jews hold this belief, too, is that I don't think I'm moral because of my Jewish religion. I think I'm moral because I've been taught to be moral. And I think that can come through a religious lens, but I don't think it necessarily has to. I think my Judaism has been important in informing my morality and my ethics, but it's not essential. So that's where I come from on that one.
And it's funny, when me and Sam were having that conversation, I was telling her, I think I'm the opposite. So I think I'm moral because of my religion. Generally, Islam has a misconception of being violent. Islam has a misconception of being violent, and being Muslim means that, rid everyone that's not Muslim. That's not the case, I promise. When I walk into a room, I just always, or anything, that people always think that, or especially the airport, I always get these stares. But I want to overly emphasize that my religion teaches us peace, and my morals come from my religion, and it teaches us so many different things about how to treat other people, especially that aren't part of our religion, and how we're supposed to treat everyone fairly. So where I get my morals, or where my morals stem from, is my religious upbringing.
I think those are two very interesting answers, and my response would maybe be like a conglomeration of those two, because I think they both have interesting points to bring up. Because I think morals can come from many different areas. So like Sam mentioned, she thinks she gets some of her morality, that like religion can inform her morality. So I think that one of the areas that we can get our morals from is like society and culture, and religion is clearly a part of our culture. So that's an area that can have an impact on what you believe to be moral, for sure. But I think more fundamentally than that, I think our sense of morality comes from sort of an innate moral compass that all of us are born with. And the explanation for that is just, it comes from evolution, basically. That, you know, humans, our species has been around 100,000 years, give or take. And we're a very social species. So our ancestors were, you know, had to live in groups cooperatively. And, you know, even predating civilization, we were cooperating as tribes and things like that. And just in order to survive in those kinds of scenarios, you need to figure out certain things, like altruism is like a good idea for a way for a species to successfully survive together. So I think, you know, religion can have something to say about morality, but I think it's just crazy to think that we wouldn't, or like we're not capable of figuring out that like murder is wrong without religion. I think that's, there's certain things that are just so obvious and so central to our own humanity that we don't really need religion for some basic stuff.
I think that's a really interesting point. I actually never thought about it that way, that evolution can inform morality. I think that, like, I think that makes a lot of sense. But I think religion, as in like a lot of societal like constructs, like helps us organize our lives and helps us come at something in a certain way. So I very much agree with you, and I like the way that you put that.
Thanks.
Sorry.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there's certain questions that, you know, human evolution obviously didn't prepare us to have a good moral opinion about like stem cell research. Like that's a, you know, a new technology where it's a very recent moral quandary. So like religion is going to have something to say about that. And like secularists will have a different thing to say about that maybe, but certain like basic moral tenets. And, you know, I'm talking about like the golden rule, for example. I think that is just so central and so innate in us. And since I talked about morality, I could bring up another issue which has to do with that, which is, you may not know this, but in the human brain, there's certain things called mirror neurons, which is brain structures that we've evolved to have. And the way that this works is that, like, if you imagine yourself riding a bike right now, the parts of your brain involved with bike riding will be activated as if you really were riding a bike. So like the same parts of your brain that get activated when you're riding a bike will be lighting up if you even just think about it. So mirror neurons are really an excellent evolutionary way for us to feel empathy for others. So like if you watch a YouTube video where like maybe you've seen ones where like a crazy Russian guy is like hanging off a building by one hand, then like you feel that stress and like your palms will start sweating and like your heart is racing. And that's just because your brain is so good at mirroring the experiences of other people that like you can't help but feel their, put yourself into their situation. And empathy and altruism is like the basis of all morality. So our brains are they're basically hardwired for us to experience that, and we can't help it.
I like what you... Sorry, I'll sit closer. I'm a quiet talker. I think it's really interesting that you brought up the golden rule, because that's actually in the Bible. And Judaism and Christianity, I don't know about Islam, you can speak to that better than I can, both have the golden rule. But I think...
What's the golden rule?
Like, do unto others as you would do unto yourself.
We have the golden rule.
I think the difference between, like, the Christian one and the Jewish one is that, like, it's, like, do unto others as you would do unto, like, yourself. And then, like, the other one is, like, the negative version of that statement. So, like, don't do unto others as you do unto yourself. But I don't know which one's which, and I'm very sorry for that. But I think it's interesting. I think I kind of want to go back to what you were saying. Like, I think the mirror neurons thing is really interesting. And if you guys listen to podcasts, Invisibilia did a really interesting podcast about mirror neurons, which I recommend. But I think it's interesting to think about how we as a society, like, form. And I think that, like, I don't know, it's sometimes really hard. Like, people can be chaotic, I think, at times. And I think religion, at least for me, is a good way to, like, organize life. And I don't think you necessarily need, like I said before, I don't think you necessarily need religion to be moral, but I think it is a way to organize morality in your life and in society.
So to speak about the golden rule, I don't think it's necessarily, okay, so it's in Arabic, and it's, like sayings, I guess. So it's treat other people as you'd like to be treated, or in a sense. And when I was younger, I was like, so if I wanted to buy a pretty purse, that means I have to buy my friend a pretty purse. And then my, like, the guy of my religious thing is like, I mean, in a sense, yes, but in a sense, no. And I was like, okay, like, that's how I understood it when I was younger. But, like, getting old, like, as you grow up, you start realizing, for example, if I am walking down the street, I wouldn't want somebody to cut me off, so I don't cut that person off. Just, like, basic moral things that you do out of respect for other people. So I that ties into morality in itself, that, you know, your morals of how you expect to be treated, you wouldn't want to treat someone else. And even if you don't get treated well, you still shouldn't treat another person horribly or not as well as they treated you. So, sorry, I think I saw questions. And yes.
Sure. So you guys are saying that you're getting some of your morals from religion. I'm just wondering, like, what basis does religion get their morals? Like, how does, you know, what's, so you're saying, like, religion has this moral authority, and where does religion get its ideas of what's moral and what's not?
Definitely. That's a good question.
That's a really interesting question, and I feel like that's a theological question that is beyond my capacity. But I think maybe this is just my view as a Jew, is that Jews have been historically persecuted, like a persecuted people. And it's really central in Judaism, like the concept of justice is a very central part of Judaism. And I feel like I get a sense of my morality because it's actually interesting. I'm not from Wisconsin, and I've actually never really felt like a minority until coming here. And I've actually become more religious since coming here because this is the first time that I've really felt like a minority person. But I think I lost my train of thought, but the point is that justice and the idea of, like, tikkun olam, which is repairing the world, that we need to help other people because we know how that feels, because we've been through that. And I think that's how my religious background can fuel my morality, because of the very, like, virtue of me being a minority.
All right, the panel has to move on to the second subtopic. Excuse my stammer. Wow. The religious understanding of social justice.
I kind of hit on that.
I guess I can answer your question and I guess hit this. So social justice is a big part of being Muslim and basically human rights. I cannot stress this enough. What's going on in the world today should not be going on in the world today. It's an issue it definitely negatively portrayed that there are some certain things that happen in the Middle East that do not reflect the religion. I don't really want to go into specifics, but there are just certain things. So where we get our, like, for example, social justice or our morals or anything encompassing the religion is through our prophet, so the teachings and sayings of our prophet. It's separate of our holy book. We have different, like, we have different guidelines. And it's basically the friends of the Prophet who were around him that after the Prophet, our Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, after he passed away, his friends started writing all the things that he's done, like, in his life, all the things that he practiced, and it, like, passed on to generations. So that's where we get, like, for example, how we treat other people or, like, how we pray and stuff like that through his teachings.
Sure. I can jump in here. I guess... this is a complicated question for atheists because we, you know, don't have any dogmas. We don't have any spiritual leaders or any holy books to, like, instruct us about how we should approach these kinds of topics. So there's actually a lot of conflicting views in the atheist movement about social justice and what we should be doing with it. There's a certain camp which thinks that the atheist movement is really, it should all be about organizing atheists and creating atheist groups and making sure that atheists have a safe place where they can congregate and talk to each other and hang out. Or also that the atheist movement should be concerned with things like church-state separation and just making sure our government is secular. And those are all very important issues. But sometimes these people also think that we should focus on those sorts of things, which are like the things that we're best at, just, you know, focusing only on atheist issues, and that everything else is kind of a distraction. So we shouldn't get involved with social justice issues because these other groups somewhere else are doing a better job of that. And if atheists want to get involved with other issues, they should get involved with those other groups, which are already doing important things. But we as atheists shouldn't be doing other things which are beyond the scope of the movement. But I'm not sure I agree with that. AHA, for example, we've done things like we've marched in the gay pride parade. So, like, that's one issue where we're like, you know, we're not going to sit on the fence with this one. This is, like, an important enough issue that I think we should take a stand on this. But then on the other hand, you know, there's certain issues where the atheist movement hasn't really been engaging very much. Like we were talking about earlier this morning with, you know, other social justice issues. And, you know, the question is, like, what does secularism actually have to offer to these marginalized groups? And, like, if all we do is talk about philosophy all the time, well, we're going to select for a certain kind of person who's going to be interested in coming to those very specific church-state science-y issues, and we're not going to appeal to other people who care about other, you know, more important issues. So it's a very difficult subject in the atheist movement, and there's not a lot of agreement about what to do.
Yeah.
So, I guess along those same lines, the whole panel, have you ever found that your faith or your perspective on that is actually a hindrance to social justice, thinking specifically about women's rights, gay rights, you know, the way that the culture is changing quickly in some cases, religion changes less quickly or just large movements change less quickly. Have you actually found those to be impediment to social justice and an impediment to your group embracing the social justice that's coming?
I guess I'll go first. So I've come from a very liberal strain of Judaism. So, like, usually, like, Jewish women, they wear dresses. I'm wearing a dress today, but, like, can promise you that I'm usually, like, bumming around in a pair of leggings and a sweatshirt. I've never personally, like, felt restricted in my religion. Like, a lot of synagogues don't have female rabbis, and my synagogue back home has a female rabbi. The Hillel here has a female rabbi. I haven't felt, like, as a, like, a woman, like, I've never felt hindered by my religion. And I don't think, like, religion can, it doesn't have to be a hindrance to social justice if you don't, if, like, that's not the perspective you come from. So my synagogue back home, I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, and I'm sure you all are very familiar with what has happened in Ferguson. My rabbi has been in every protest at Ferguson, and, like, it's just been so central in my personal religious upbringing that if something happens, like, you act, and I mean, that might be my personal experience, but I think that's also very central to the religion. There's this one part of the Torah, it's, says, tzedek, tzedek, tirdath, it's justice, justice you shall pursue. And like I said before, like social justice and acting for other people. Like, my synagogue also walks in the gay pride parade in St. Louis. Like, I think you can come, like, you can come to very liberal understandings of social justice even through religion.
This panel is meant to be a little bit less interactive than the last, just because it's a bit more controversial of a topic, and because the religious attendees of our conference sometimes feel more like guests than like members of a secular community. So just to keep things more comfortable for them, limited audience participation is requested in the rest of this panel. Thank you.
I could jump in there here too. Or were you about to go? Sorry.
Sorry, it's not for a long time.
No, please go for it.
So I was going to mention, or to, in response to your question, I think atheism can be somewhat of a hindrance to getting involved in social justice kinds of issues, or at least it's not helpful just because atheism, you know, pure atheism is merely the lack of a belief in a God. So it doesn't, there's no call to action there specifically, just I'm talking about pure philosophical atheism. But most atheists are also some sort of humanist, like a secular humanist, and that's where our moral philosophy really comes from, is the, you know, secular humanist viewpoint. And that would be basically the view that, you know, atheists believe that this is the only life that we ever get, and our life here on Earth is very short, and our time is very precious, and just the fact that, you know, we don't believe in a God, so we don't think any help is ever going to come from above. So whenever we see suffering or injustices in the world, we know that it's totally up to us humans to combat those and try to correct those issues. So I really like what you had to say about, you know, when you see injustice, like, you really have to go do something about it.
I think that my religion, or any religion, or I'll speak from my religion. So I think my religion is liberating, if anything. So I generally get the question that, like, did your parents make you wear the hijab? And the hijab is scarf. And I always, I'm always taken aback when people ask me that, because if anything, ever since I started wearing it, I feel more outspoken, and I feel that I should represent my religion in a certain way, that if I do see an injustice, for example, that I should be there. I should be at the protest. I should be at the vigil. They're actually having a vigil today for Tony Robinson at a church or something, or at actually his old high school, and the MSA is going to it. So in my opinion, when injustices do happen in the world, that everyone should come together, and no matter what religion or religious background or what you think, even if you don't get along with a different person's mentality, everyone should band together, because in order to overcome injustices, everyone should notice the injustice, you know? So that's my take on it. And I think the way I was brought up and the way I was taught religion was injustices shouldn't happen in the world or to anyone in particular.
That's a wonderful response. Our third subtopic is kosher and halal impurity laws. And we'll come back to kind of the social justice standpoint maybe at the end, because our fourth subtopic is, again, evil. So if this is interesting, it'll be able to keep going in just a bit. But for now, we have kosher, halal, impurity laws for our panelists to discuss.
I'll go first. So I actually don't keep kosher. Or you invited a very liberal Jew.
I mean, I don't eat halal, so it's okay.
But a lot of what kosher is not actually coming from like a morality standpoint. What it's coming from is, like, in the old world, like, you don't want to get sick and die. Like, so you don't eat shellfish because that can very easily make you sick. And it's also kosher. Also has where you don't eat dairy with meat, and I don't know what health risks that poses, to be honest. But most of those laws have to come from a purity standpoint. Not, I wouldn't say necessarily a moral standpoint.
So eating halal basically is that the meat that you eat is cut or killed a certain way, and before they kill, is this gruesome for any of you? Okay, so, sorry. The way it's killed, like, they slit the throat in a certain way that it dies instantly. And you say, like, a certain prayer before they die so they don't get hurt. And that's just, that's eating halal. And we can't eat pig. It's not because, like, we worship the pig.
Kosher.
Yeah. It's not like we worship the pig or anything. We just, God told us don't eat it. So we just don't eat pork. Yeah, so eating halal, I don't eat halal, so I eat burgers from wherever. I do have friends that we call it keep Z, like Zabiha, which means it's like cut a certain way. And they always get like black bean burgers, so there's alternative. But I don't know, I really like meat and steak, and I don't think I can give that up. It's hard here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so as the atheist on the panel, I'm definitely the contrarian on this particular topic. But I thought I would start by talking about this philosopher named Jonathan Haidt. And he talks about, he studies moral psychology. And he basically figured out that every moral question that anyone cares about can really be boiled down to about five or six different moral spheres. And everything falls within one of those five or six topics. So those topics are care and harm, so like protecting other people, fairness, so having justice and equality, things like that. Number three is liberty, freedom, those kinds of issues, freedom from oppression or tyranny. Four is loyalty to your group, your family, your nation, something like that. Number five is respecting authority, obeying tradition. And number six has to do with things involving sanctity and purity and avoiding disgusting foods or disgusting acts. And the really interesting thing, and you might have already noticed this about yourself, is that conservative people view all six of these moral issues as about equally important. But if you happen to be a liberal person, you probably noticed that you cared a lot about the first three. So fairness, liberty, harming other people. But if you're liberal, you probably didn't really care about the last three, which are respecting authority. Atheists hate that. Things with sanctity and purity, and also having loyalty to something like a nation. So I think with this particular topic, my brain is just very different than the brain of maybe a religious person. So I just don't have any conception of purity, and I don't think there's any like. To me, I'll just speak for me specifically, there's no logical reason that purity makes any sense at all. Like, the idea that you shouldn't eat pigs, for example, just seems totally arbitrary. And if you had a different religion, that religion could say, like, don't eat carrots. And there's nothing really underlying that. And there's no, like, moral justification for it. Maybe I'll stop there.
I mean, in the same vein, like I said before, I think a lot of these laws in Judaism don't necessarily come from a moral place, but come from a purity place. And I understand the line of logic that you're discussing. But I think it's interesting because, and I were talking about this earlier, Judaism doesn't have a concept of hell. So, like, if you don't do these things, like, you're not going to hell. Like, you're not a bad person. I don't believe because I don't keep kosher that I'm going to hell, and I don't think that I'm a morally, or I'm an amoral person because I don't keep kosher, or I don't follow certain, like, purity practices. Like, Judaism doesn't believe that, like, you are amoral because you don't necessarily do that.
Speaking about the pig, the reason why we don't, or it's like we don't, we're told not to eat it. It's a test from God. So, I mean, and there can be opinions where it's like, well, if God loves you, you shouldn't, like, you don't have to listen to that. But it's interesting because you see bacon and everyone's like, oh, everyone's obsessed with bacon. And I was like, I don't understand it. I'll never know, you know, but it just seems like this amazing thing that everyone's
Wait,
like, oh my
God. Do you not eat pork?
Pork is pig.
Yeah, I eat pork, and that's not kosher.
Sam, that's going against your liberal views. No, I don't eat anything.
But you said you don't keep halal. Sorry.
Oh, let me clarify. Okay, so halal and not eating pig are two different things. So okay. Halal basically means that an animal is killed and cut a certain way, and then not eating pig is like part of our, I guess, purity laws. So we have two different things. So, sorry. Thank you. So halal is just basically it's killed a certain way, and then so we don't all follow that. But the pig thing is, I guess, really big in Islam, and we get made fun of for it all the time because you have some Muslims who drink, and we can't drink either. So some Muslims who drink, they're like, but I don't eat pork, you know? So it's very contradicting. and that's not allowed. It's just another clarification. So going back to the pig, what was I saying about pigs? Oh, so everyone like puts bacon on like their burgers and bacon on salad and bacon on everything. I'm just like, I want to know how it feels like. So I had turkey bacon, and I don't know. Can anyone verify? Is that close enough?
It's not the same.
Not good.
No. Guys, give me some slack here. I'm trying to make myself feel better. Dang it. All right, fine, whatever. But yeah, so I don't know. I wouldn't know. And I just believe it's a test. If you can abstain from that, you should be able to abstain from other things.
We were talking mostly about purity in terms of food. But if I could change the subject just a little bit, when we're talking about purity, I thought I wanted to like also mention another whole other realm where I think ideas about purity can actually be harmful sometimes. So when you're dealing with food, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, it's not going to hurt anyone, whether your personal choice to whether or not to eat a certain type of food or not. Like, I don't care either way. It's, you know, totally up to you. You know, getting back to that idea of liberty, that's a liberal value. So I'm like, yeah, great. I'm really glad you have the choice to eat whatever you want. But purity can have negative consequences in some cases. And I'm referring to basically all three Abrahamic religions, especially in the Old Testament. They have a certain obsession, I would say, with female virginity and female sexuality, and just the ideas of purity behind that whole issue, where, you know, if a woman isn't a virgin on her wedding night, she should be stoned to death. So the idea of purity there is basically teaching girls that their virginity is, it gives them a certain amount of value, and then if once they lose that, they've become like less of a person, or they have less value, and that has all kinds of really negative consequences, especially in certain countries where you have things like honor killings, where if you know, a woman has premarital sex or whatever, then her family might actually disown her or try to kill her, just because she's brought so much shame on the family for doing this thing which is not pure or not allowed. So I'll just throw that out there, and I don't know if we have time to even comment on that, but hopefully.
I actually like 100% agree with you on that one. I think ideas of like suppressing women's sexuality is not a good idea, and I'm a religious person, but I'm also a very sex positive person. But I mean, I don't want to like hate on someone who like very much believes that virginity is important to them, because like, go for it. Like, you do you. But I agree with you very much so. A lot has a different view.
Okay. I personally would never shame someone who isn't a virgin. That's up to, I strongly believe like a human is a human, obviously, and that you can do whatever you want, and that's not my, like, who am I to tell you not to do something? You know, that's up to you. You're a person, you have your own thoughts, go for it. I believe, actually it's a really big part of Islam that committing adultery or having sex before marriage isn't allowed, and it's a really big issue, and a lot of Muslims do not follow that, and it saddens me, because like I said, if God told us not to eat pork, so that's one thing we should abstain from. God also told us not to have sex before marriage, so that is also something we should abstain from. And if you're following Islam the correct way, then you don't have sex before marriage. But in going back to your stoning to death comment, that isn't really a practice that should be followed. I mean, some back in like the Prophet's days, that happened only because they wanted to, like, I guess, revive themselves. I don't even know how to say, like, I'm not a scholar, so I wouldn't be able to even exactly talk about this, but I don't believe that's right. I don't believe that's something that people should do. And in order to prove that a woman isn't a virgin, like, you have to have, like, four witnesses. Where are you going to get what four people are going to see a woman that, you know, did whatever? So, I don't know. It's a very controversial topic, I think, in Islam also, because people don't know what to do if they know a woman isn't a virgin versus if she is. And some guys accept it. Some women tell them, like, I had sex before marriage, and some guys are very understanding. And if you can turn a new leaf and you can ask God for forgiveness, personally, I think that's good enough. But I don't know. Some people have different perspectives. I just think that in Islam, because God told us don't have sex before marriage, that there's a reason for that, and it's a bigger reason than I would ever know. So I don't really question it or, like, try to go against it.
All right. Our fourth and final subtopic is the concept of where evil comes from in morality. So panelists, that's going to be our final discussion.
Someone else want to go first?
Go ahead.
So, you know, the question of where evil comes from, and also theodicy, which is, you know, the problem of evil, classic philosophical question for religious people to answer. You know, I don't know if we want to get into it, but, you know, the question is, if God is all-knowing and all-powerful and all-good, then why is there evil and suffering in the world? And there's lots of, you know, various apologetic responses to that. But I think for atheists, that's not really a problem. Like, that's not a big mystery to us. We don't really have any conception of, like, a supernatural good or a transcendent evil. There's like, good actions and evil actions, but those are only things that are done by humans to other humans. There's no, you know, supernatural forces that are, you know, creating or causing good or evil as, like, a force that transcends the rest of humanity. There's only how people treat each other. I'll start with that.
So I think when we're younger, I went to Sunday school, we're always taught, like, the devil is evil, so the devil makes you do evil things. That's not true. Or I got older and, like, went through different things in my life, I realized, because we do have free will, so we believe that we have free will. So I think anything a person does, and it's really sad to say, but it's within themselves. I do believe that the devil has something to do with it, because, you know, he's always in the back of your head. But I also think that can be interpreted as the bad, you know, like in psychology, how there's your ego and, like, your, so you have, like, a subconscious. Sometimes it's easier to be evil, or sometimes it's easier to do the wrong thing. And sorry, am I good on time?
You are good on time. Okay. Yes, just the Freudian psychology of ego, superego isn't accepted as valid and hasn't been for decades.
No, that's so fine.
As a psych student, I just...
No, that's okay. But in Psychology 101 that we learned here in Madison, like, we did go through it. So, and I went through it in one of my HD Fest classes. It's just an example I was trying to give. Sorry that I offended the psychologist.
I'm so offended.
Just that there is... Okay, sorry. So there was a thought that was like that, whatever, that people have. Anyways, moving on. Okay. Let me collect my thoughts. Going back to what I was saying, you can have whatever thoughts or feelings of doing bad things, but if you've grown up, or, like, depending on the neighborhood that you grew up in, or the family, or, like, what your family, like, what your parents taught you, and it goes back to morals too. So depending on how you grew up, and depending on how, like, you live your life, I believe that people will choose the right, or the good way, or the right way, or however you want to look at it. I don't know if there's also, like, different definitions of being good. So, I don't know, it just depends.
Okay, so I personally have a really hard time with this question, because I don't know, like, theologically, I hope that's the right word for it, but I don't know in Judaism where evil comes from. I guess maybe I'll just speak personally on it. I just personally like to believe that people are inherently good. I think I have too high of a trust in humanity. I've been told that. I just always remember back to, like, when I was little and going to Shabbat service, and my rabbi would just say, like, you have the spark of God within you. Like, each person has that within them. And, like, each person can do such great things. And I just personally have a hard time, I don't know, I guess, conceptualizing where evil comes from in the world. And that's just me. So that's all I have to say.
I think those are both interesting comments from you guys. I think, Ala, you're mentioning that environment, like environmental factors can have an effect, like the area you grow up in. So that gets back to like where morality comes from. And I think that your environment plays a big role in that. And if you grow up in a place where like you're starving, and then you might be forced to, you know, out of desperation to do certain things which are immoral, but you're just sort of a victim of your circumstances. And I also agree with what Sam had just mentioned about people being inherently good. I think I also agree with that. Again, what I said in the beginning about how our brains are hardwired for morality and altruism and empathy. But there is a caveat to that, which is that people's brains are usually hardwired for that sort of empathy, but they're not always. And the people who lack that source of empathy, you know, they're called psychopaths. So it's actually quite disturbing. You know, 1 or 2% of our population are psychopaths, and they just totally, you know, lack that sense of concern for how their actions affect the, you know, suffering or well-being of other people. And the worst thing of all is that if you actually look at CEOs of companies, they are overwhelmingly overrepresented as psychopaths. So the people in the world who have really the most amount of money and the most amount of political influence and the most amount of power, these are also the people who happen to be psychopaths, which is just terrifying. And it explains a lot about how screwed up the world is, I think.
I think NPR did a story on that. I listened to a lot of NPR.
NPR is great. We're on the same page there.
Are we done? Are we done?
Oh, yeah.
All right. How are the panelists feeling about answering a question or two from the audience? Do we feel comfortable doing that?
Yeah, totally. Sure.
Wonderful. All right. I know Candace had a question.
Can I give you the mic?
Oh, sure. Just a quick theological question for Judaism. With the relationship to Christianity, were you guys not taught about Lucifer and angels falling from heaven and rebellion and that being the source of evil? Is that not the same lesson? That's all.
Maybe. I have to be honest, it's been a very long time since I've gone to Hebrew school. But I believe that Lucifer is in the New Testament. Is that correct? No, it's the Old Testament. It's not emphasized because I clearly don't remember it. Okay. Okay. It made no impression on me, clearly.
Sure. Guy in the back.
There is no mention of hell until the New Testament. It's an entirely Christian idea. My question on morality is that in the Christian days, I realize none of you are Christian, but I get a little frustrated at the idea of telling children that they have this inherent evil, that they're damaged goods, simply because of something that, you know, theoretically happened way back in, you know, the Genesis story.
No. I find that problematic because I feel like any child is inherently good, and to suggest that they're not, you know, as a basis for religion, that really frustrates me.
I actually want to point out that we are taught when we're younger that kids are born pure. So it's not until you get older that you become impure, when you see like all the impurities in the world, or like I said, the environment that you live in, or if, you know, you're not taught these like moral things. So the rule that I guess is said when you, once you hit puberty, I guess that's when your good and bad deeds start. piling up. So when you're younger and you do bad things, it's not counted against you. And even in Sunday school, we don't tell the kids that you're born with a sin. They're actually born without sin. That's in Islam. So when you're born without sin. You're born with a clean slate until you hit puberty, and that's when you start, I guess. That's when your time starts ticking.
Yeah.
So get all your sinning done when you're a kid.
Exactly. Exactly. I always thought, like, I was like, yes, every bad thing that I did when I was younger up until I hit that age, I was like, I'm good. It's not going to count against me.
Yeah. And Judaism doesn't have that concept of hell. So, like, kids aren't, like, I was never taught that, like, I have sinned. Like, I think Judaism is very much about, like, just being the best person you can be. We have an idea of, like, purgatory, and we have heaven. And, like, I was talking to a lot about this earlier.
We talk a lot about religion, in case you guys didn't catch that one.
Alaa and I have been best friends since, like, freshman year. So, I just can't conceptualize the idea of hell. Like, I personally, it just, like, holds no fear for me, because I've just never been taught that.
Yes.
Okay. I got a point of curiosity. Would you two ladies, since she said you were both part of your organizations respectively, if the atheist organization were to get together some sort of charitable project, would you guys be willing to cooperate with them, and vice versa, would you be willing to talk to them about cooperating with a charitable object you were doing?
Definitely.
Yeah,
yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like I said, who am I to, if you're of faith, if you're not of faith, if you believe in God, if you don't believe in God, who am I to judge a person? I'm not God, essentially. So I can't tell. I mean, personally, as a whole, we have nothing against anyone that's not of our religion or of not religion. So having inclusivity, I want to say, and getting along, like, I'm Muslim and Sam's Jewish. I've been to Hillel. Sam's, like, asked me about my religion before. She's been to the mosque. Like, if you're a person and you understand that everyone is different and that you can get along even if you do have differences, there's no problem combining any events or combining even going to religious practices with the other person. Mm-hmm. There's no problem there. So
yeah,
we'd love to join whatever things you guys have. So.
Yeah, I mean, and speaking specifically about charitable causes, I think that's one very clear area where we can obviously find common ground. Like, we know that, like, homelessness or hunger in Wisconsin or in Madison, like, obviously all religions are going to agree that that's a problem. That's, like, human suffering, basic logic, you know, that's something that we could all agree on. We should work towards alleviating that kind of suffering. So I think there's lots of opportunities for collaboration with interfaith dialogue and things like that.
Yeah. All right. It is 12 o'clock noon. So that concludes our panel. So I want to hear a round of applause for Alaa, Sam, and Chris, our great panelists.